I was like, nah, I'm not gonna get any Wi-Fi on this flight.
I'm taking 3 hours off.
Yep. You just deal with this.
This time is for me and bourbon. Well, yes, I would like an $8 Woodford, please.
Live from the Mundangerous Debate Hall in New York City, I'm your host Shane.
And I'm your host Ishan.
And welcome to episode 138 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're talking about the chaotic neutral alignment, and probably getting into an argument. But first the rogue traders take a nap in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign, and later the trickster embodies the fickleness of the Fae in the Character Creation Forge. Shane, are we in a debate hall because... when you are in a debate, you basically have no moral compass and you're just arguing for a particular side that you've been assigned. Is that it?
Sure. Let's go with that. I liked it because there are no rules in the debate hall.
I see.
Because I don't follow them.
You're out of order.
Exactly.
That's how that works. So speaking of not having a horse in the race... Pathfinder 2nd Edition is coming out.
Yeah, the playtest rules are already available if you wanted to go on Paizo's website to download them. And apparently you can also pay full price for a Pathfinder playtest book.
Yeah, I don't think we'll be doing that. I do think, however, we will be trying to get our hands on an advanced copy of the final rules whenever those come out. And reviewing it for our audience. This will be the first Pathfinder book we actually review.
Mm-hmm.
Because neither of us plays Pathfinder, because, well, I hopped onto 4th edition. You were sort of...
I skipped the whole period. And 5th edition was already late in its playtest by the time that I came back to D&D. So, Pathfinder didn't exist for me at all, basically.
And I think it's kind of a bit of a hole in our RPG coverage because, remember, when we were at Gen Con last year, we were amazed at the number of people playing in, like, Pathfinder League.
Yeah, the Adventurer Society, I think it is.
Sure.
Pathfinder Society. There you go. That makes more sense.
So we know that there are a bunch of people out there who play Pathfinder, love Pathfinder. I would be interested to see what all of you think, though, about getting a second edition, because I know a lot of the reason that people moved over to Pathfinder is that they wanted to keep 3.5 books. They didn't want to have to buy into a new edition, learn a new rule set. But here we are. And, you know, I guess 10 years is a pretty good amount of time to get out of a game system. But I'd be interested to see how many people roll over into second edition or how many others kind of go, well, I don't know, maybe now's the time we take a look at fifth edition.
Yeah, I don't have any strong, like, feeling about this, right? Like, to me, it's natural that games get updates. You know, publishers have to release new editions. It's just sort of being part of an active hobby. So I don't have any, like, complaint that they're trying to do a second edition. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what the Pathfinder faithful feel. And I don't have a good sense of that yet. I suppose when it's finally released, we'll get a better feel for what direction it's headed.
I'm very excited for a new batch of Edition Wars, but this time not involving me.
Right. Cannot wait to watch this one on cable news.
All right. So speaking of useless infighting, Shane, where are we in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign?
So the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign is our Warhammer 40K Rogue Trader game played using Dark Heresy 2nd Edition rules by Fantasy Flight Games. And on the Dead World Malajacked, the Rogue Traders and their two best companies of armsmen have located the Verza House, an ancient obsidian fortress once occupied by the fallen Dark Angel, Lord Cypher.
Screw this place.
Yeah, so you spent the day exploring the house, had a few unnerving developments, shall we say, because it's, you know, it's eerie, it's creepy, it's abandoned, and it seems to be playing tricks on everyone's mind. But ultimately, dusk was falling and you had a choice of sleeping outside in a dust storm or inside in the safe
sturdy confines of the fortress.
Sure. I mean, okay, considering that we'd been outside for, what, 4 or 5 days at this point, all mm-hmm. of our gear was clogged with what is essentially fiberglass.
Yeah, yeah.
As were our lungs.
Indeed.
We figured, fine, like, we'll stay inside. Dun-dun-dun. Because no one rests easy. There are fitful dreams, similar to the ones that we had endured while we were trekking through the glass storm to get here.
Yeah, dried skulls in a dusty valley.
At one point, our astropath, Flair, awakes to the sound of grinding stone. He begins to panic, and so he rouses our arch-militant Draco, and they go off to investigate. Alone? Just the two of them?
Well, yeah, because...
Seems bright.
Well, the concern is that if they spook the men, and knowing that this is... The reports coming from, you know, across the house have generally been, you know, eerie, creepy, demoralizing things going on. They don't want to rattle anybody unnecessarily.
So the sound of grinding eventually leads them to the basement where there is, lo and behold, an engine room in the house.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like a power generator, basically. And it's, you know, off. But they, and other than that, like, they can't really find the source of the grinding. You know, Flair is completely convinced that this is where it came from. Draco at this point isn't even sure that he really heard anything. And, you know, other than an engine that has already been sort of identified, inspected, and they can't figure out how to get it to turn on to actually, you know, enable power in the house, nothing looks awry.
Well, that's a good sign. Hmm. Here's an engine that should be supplying power to the house, but we can't figure out how to turn it on. But let's keep trying. So eventually they give up. Flair insists the sound was real, but they're not really sure. They go back to sleep. And Flair keeps dreaming about this same grinding sound, although there are some additions to his dream.
Yeah, the dream is getting more vivid, and he keeps seeing this giant albino worm with this thick, chitinous, segmented sort of outer skin shell chewing its way through the earth and dragging its body slowly across the stone, just grinding through the crust of the earth.
I have that dream too sometimes.
Yeah? Yeah. How does that turn out for you?
I wake myself up. I don't want to find out.
Yeah.
I don't want to see where this is going.
But Flair's not the only one to have troublesome dreams tonight. Because meanwhile, Seneschal Trix has a vivid dream of his own.
And we'll find out what it's about next week.
So this week, we are continuing our new series on alignments as we discuss playing Chaotic Neutral.
Yes, part two of our series. Last time we talked about Lawful Good, so we thought we would delve into the two other types of alignments,
which are, of course, chaos and neutral.
Okay, so a quick reminder for those of you who don't know that much about alignment. Shane, what is it?
So alignment is basically a descriptor within D&D based on two axes. So you have law and chaos, and you have good and evil. So lawful is orderly, duty, reliability. Society relies on people doing what they need to do in order to keep everybody working more efficiently.
On the opposite side of that spectrum, you have chaos. These are people who believe in personal freedom and flexibility and self-expression. They hate mindless obedience, and they think that deference to authority crushes the spirit.
And then the other axis, the good-evil, you've got, you know, good, which stands for altruism, respecting life, compassion. You know, a good person goes out of their way to help others where it might even cause them harm to do so.
Whereas an evil person is selfish, wants to inflict harm on other people, wants to oppress others, and will seek personal gain even if it actively harms other people.
And then in between either of those, you have neutral, which is sort of not strongly in either direction, creating three values on each scale, meaning there are 9 total alignments.
So chaotic neutral is in the 3 o'clock position on the alignment wheel, if you will.
Correct. Yeah, lawful good was
10:30. 10:30, yeah.
Lawful good was northwest.
Yes, this is due east.
Right.
that's maybe that's better than a clock.
Yeah, maybe.
So yes, the chaotic aspect of being chaotic neutral is relatively straightforward. You know, you value personal freedom and expression, and you tend to reject the structures of society, at least the ones that sort of bind your hands and keep you from doing the things that you feel like you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to be a free spirit. But neutral, I think, is sort of the more challenging or problematic piece of this alignment to sort of define and work through.
Yeah, there are two general kinds of neutral that you can be. You could be neither good nor evil. You know, you are seeking balance between the good end of the spectrum and the evil end of the spectrum. Maybe this is a religious motivation. You feel that there needs to be a certain amount of each to maintain harmony. Maybe you feel like that's just the best way for you to operate as a person, is, you know, a little bit of good, a little bit of bad.
Yeah, or you could be both good and evil, which is sort of more lacking conviction, right? Like, I do what's best in the situation, right? I don't adhere strongly to a moral code, but I'm also not particularly selfish. I just try and do the best I can to get through, right? Maintain my own freedom above the sort of arbitrary morality.
Yeah, I'm a mercenary. I don't care about your holy war.
Right. I'm thoroughly in the gray between the black and the white. And I think this is where the challenge comes from for a lot of the reputation of chaotic neutral, is that the idea of balance, of being neither good nor evil, of trying to maintain both good and evil, is challenging, especially in a party of people. But it leads to sort of like a philosophical conundrum, right?
Yeah. So, like, for example, if you are trying to maintain the balance, if good is doing pretty well in the world and your idea of balancing it is to stab a bunch of people as often as you can, then maybe you're balancing the amount of good and evil in the world, but your personal actions are consistently evil.
Right.
That makes you evil.
Right, exactly. If you keep doing evil things, you're an evil person. likewise, like, occasionally doing good things to try and outweigh the evil that exists in the world doesn't make you good. Like, you know, like, it doesn't outweigh the ledger of all the evil things that you do, right? Because evil kind of has no floor. You can always do something more terrible, more depraved, more, you know, unholy.
Right. Hold my whip.
Right, exactly. You can always be worse, but there's sort of an upper limit on how good you can be, right? Like, the ultimate self-sacrifice is as far as you can go for good.
And of course, in a game like D&D, you've got canonical evil, or evils, right? The beings that are purely motivated by evil qualities. And a philosophy that seeks to balance out, like, an archdevil with, you know, Paylor, who's a shining light of good, doesn't really make that much sense.
Just the practical application is, evil wins by default, right? Like, good is an active state, and evil is sort of a resting state.
Evil will always win because good is dumb.
That's, I mean, good point, Dark Helmet. but evil is the natural end state of entropy, right? So you don't have to do anything to make evil increase is sort of the problem with a balanced philosophy.
Yeah, so I think if you're playing a chaotic neutral character who is seeking balance, it is much easier if you are seeking sort of an internal balance. And this doesn't mean, like, the party has, like, helped save some prisoners, and so now I need to go enslave some people in order to balance that out, you know? But it can just be, okay, we've done a good deed, but I did that for the money.
Right.
You know? Or I did that because it hurt the orc slavers and I don't like them.
Right.
You know, it can just be a selfish motivation that still helps the party.
Right. Or the flip side of, like, you know, I had to get my hands dirty with this, but I'm not thrilled about it, so I'm going to do something a little bit better. Like, I was willing to do the bad thing, but I'm also not willing to only do bad things.
Right. Like, if you have been in a situation where you needed to kill someone who had surrendered, maybe the next time you're like, you get off this time.
Right.
You know, it's a bit like Two-Face flipping a coin, or it can be if you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think overall, having a chaotic neutral character who lacks conviction is a much more relatable and sort of party-friendly way to approach the alignment.
Maybe for you.
Okay.
You lack conviction, Shane.
I find your lack of faith disturbing. But if you think of a lot of the sort of iconic, chaotic neutral characters, right? Like, they're all rogues and scoundrels, right? Like the Han Solos, the Jack Sparrows, the Batmans.
The Lone Star. Yes, right. of course.
Which is to say that they deal in the gray areas of morality, mostly because they don't value morality very highly. They don't really think in those terms consistently. They just kind of float along and let other people be responsible for defining it.
Right. Or they think that, you know, a highbrow view of morality is for people who have the time or the
luxury.
Yeah, of being able to deal with, oh, you know, we don't kill anyone who's surrendered. Well, that's great if you have a penal system and a jail, right. You know. But if you're like out in the wasteland, yes, you have to kill them. Otherwise, they leave and try to kill you again.
Right. I would never torture a prisoner. You know, I mean, unless I had a very, very tight clock. I just had to get it done. I mean, I'm thinking of even like just like an Aladdin type, right? Having to steal bread to eat for the night. Like, you don't have the luxury of thinking like, well, if I steal from this merchant, is the merchant going to go hungry? Mm-hmm. You know, what if everybody stole from the merchant? Like, it doesn't matter when you have a growling stomach.
Right. Let's consider the tragedy of the commons, if you will.
Yeah, exactly. So the part of this then is like, you know, you can have a character who sort of tends towards doing good things, like doesn't go out of their way to do evil, but then, you know, sometimes you got to get your hands dirty. Or likewise, you could have a character who sort of trends towards selfishness, but still has soft spots for their friends or family or, you know, like children or downtrodden, whomever.
Yeah, actually one of my favorite archetypes is that character who's like selfish and kind of a jerk, except when it comes to blank, right? Children. I always help children. You know, I really like animals even though I hate people.
Right.
All right. So what are some reasons to play a chaotic neutral character? Someone who lacks conviction and can't be bothered to get off their ass to go save the world.
You get a lot of flexibility. you're not beholden to sort of a higher code, right? So you can have the freedom to deal with problems pragmatically.
Yeah, I really like that aspect of it. If you want to play the type of character who looks at the situation and doesn't necessarily follow like a fantasy or an RPG trope when they're deciding what to do and says, okay, what would a reasonable person in this situation actually be doing? Chaotic neutral is actually a pretty good alignment.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the reality is most people are sort of between neutral and good on the scale, right? Like they try to do good, but push comes to shove, you sometimes do selfish stuff too.
Yeah, I'm not gonna go out of my way. I'm not gonna put myself in harm's way to like make things okay. And actually, you know, I'm probably not gonna like pay a little bit extra money so that someone else is doing a little better. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
I'm not doing that great.
Right. people make decisions on the margin, right? So that's pretty neutral. Likewise, another reason to play chaotic neutral is independence. You aren't beholden to the rest of society for much, including your motivation, right? Like, I don't care about concepts of, like, you know, my order or my country because, like, I do me.
And if I'm lucky, so do other people.
Well, yeah, I mean.
It also gives you an opportunity to grow into a different alignment. I actually really like starting all my characters off as true neutral or, you know, one of the neutrals. So that they can become defined by their actions as time goes on. You know, so you can say, oh, my backstory is like I saved an orphanage and I'm good. Or it can be like, I haven't really committed. I am neutral. But then when your character is presented with different options during the game, you're going to make decisions based around that. And I think that that can sort of expose to you as the player what your character's alignment actually is as they go. I think we've talked about emergent backstories before. This is like emergent alignment.
Right. Yeah, this is a great starting point. I mean, it's sort of like the distinction between Han Solo and Jack Sparrow, right? Like one of the things that makes Han Solo so great is that he starts out chaotic neutral and really does sort of move towards like a chaotic good. And one of the things that makes Jack Sparrow so frustrating and also sort of endearing is that he never changes, right? he's always looking out for number one. Even when it kind of like hurts him and like emotionally, right, he struggles with it. He still kind of just sticks with neutral.
He's seeking balance. He's striving for balance in the universe.
That's not
probably
quite right.
What he's doing.
He's trying to balance his base desire for Elizabeth Swanson with his equally base desire for Colt.
I mean, aren't we all?
And ideally some revenge.
Chaotic neutral also lets you add a nice bit of interpersonal tension with characters who are more noble-minded. It's much, much easier to balance with a chaotic neutral character than, for example, a chaotic evil or even like a lawful evil character.
Yeah.
Who, you know, has not just selfish but actively evil motivations and desires. It's really tough to get, you know, even the like Robin Hood archetype, who like doesn't believe in rules and is fine with, you know, stealing as long as like poor people get some of it, mm-hmm. to go along with someone who's like, well, yeah, but I mean, what if we just like burn the whole village down?
Right. Yeah. there's some lateral thinking that doesn't quite work for a party. And then the last thing that I really like about chaotic neutral is you get the chance to be like the wild card, right? So, this is the Mal Reynolds type where, you know, the paladin and the cleric are arguing over what they need to do with these captured enemy soldiers, on their stealth mission or whatever it is. And the rogue just goes and slits their throats, right? It's like, they're dead. Problem solved. Let's get moving.
Did you just call Mal Reynolds chaotic neutral?
I think so.
We are going to get so much hate mail.
It's actually, I think it's Jane who actually does this, right? It's not Mal.
Well, actually, if you remember in the pilot, Lawrence has a gun to River's head and Mal's just like, I'm sick of this, and just shoots him in the face.
Okay, yeah. All right, there you go. Like, you know, but you get that, and again, you know, you have to modulate this within the context of the scene and your group, but you do have that sort of freedom to, you know, just kind of, you know what? Like, there is a pragmatic solution, and I am going to be the deliverer of it. like you guys can argue about the right thing to do. I'm going to do the thing that gets us moving forward.
Yeah, and we'll talk about this a bit more later, but you do want to make sure that it doesn't devolve into essentially, like, I'm insane.
Right,
you
yeah.
know, sort of like the gentlest iterations of Harley Quinn.
Okay.
who, you know, bonks people on the head with a mallet, but nobody dies.
Right, okay. I see what you're saying.
All right, so you're chaotic neutral. You're part of an adventuring party. Why? Because you're looking out for number one, man. Why are you with these jokers?
You might not have a place in society, right? So many of the chaotic neutral sort of iconic individuals are rogues. They're scoundrels. That's sort of how you end up this alignment, or what society does to people who have this alignment. They push them to the fringes, to the outside, to the underclass.
Yeah, I like that you can actually have two chaotic neutral characters, and one is there by choice, and the other is there because they have no other options.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing, is it might not be that you don't have a place in society, it's that you've rejected your place in society, right? Like the noble-born who decides to slum it in Williamsburg.
The Trustafarian.
Right.
You could do so much good with that money. Yeah, but... Nah.
Right, I'd rather grow a beard and wear flannel.
You're halfway there right now. You have a substantial beard.
My beard is coming off soon, though. As soon as this weather turns, man.
Okay, so 3 more months.
Yeah.
You could be out adventuring for purely selfish reasons, some personal objective. This is Haley in Order of the Stick. She starts off very chaotic neutral, and you find out the reason she's doing it is to buy her father's freedom.
Yeah, or the brother in Firefly, right? It's all about protecting River, even though he is a noble-born doctor and all of those things.
Did you just call Simon. Chaotic neutral?
Maybe.
We are going to get okay. So much hate mail.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not using... I'm using the motivation
when
of
obviously
Simon,
he's,
not the characterization.
He's neutral evil by placing the safety of his sister above all of those other people he could be saving as a doctor.
Okay. Right. And this is the aforementioned argument. there are also the sort of more basic reasons, right? Fame or infamy or profit. You know, just the usual, like, I want to be independent, and so that's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, this is a really good alignment for NPCs that the party deals with. If you're running some, think of the information broker, the drug dealer. These are people who, you know, they don't kill people because it's fun. They just, if they need to save their own hides, yeah, they'll kill someone. If it is beneficial to them, yeah, they'll save someone.
Right.
And they can go either way. They can help the party. They can hinder the party.
I think there can also be sort of a lazy ennui that can lead you to adventuring as well. You know, it's like, well, adventuring seems better than working on a dock for the rest of my life or dying in a cavalry charge. So I don't know. Maybe I'll give that a shot.
Yeah, I'm not out here because I want to save the world. I'm not out here for any particular motivation, but everyone's got to eat.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the alternatives look pretty bleak as well.
Yeah, this is, like, if we don't die or get eaten by carrion crawlers, this is way more lucrative.
Right.
I'm basically buying stock in a startup
right
now.
Our adventuring company.
Right. Yeah. Stock options, right?
I'm hoping to buy your options on the cheap too when you die in that dungeon.
It's a nice jacket.
I'm gonna take them from your estate, don't worry.
I have joined an adventuring company where everyone is my size.
So what are some moral dilemmas that can challenge chaotic neutral characters?
Well, that's a little tougher because unlike a lawful good character, for example, the good versus evil morality is much less definitive for a chaotic neutral character. But you can really challenge their chaotic worldview because they're usually pretty beholden to living a life that is operating outside of the rules.
Right.
So maybe that means that they're offered an opportunity to address injustices that are occurring within a libertarian society or a primitive society where the rules are less important.
Right. You can also create situations where appealing to authority is actually the easiest approach. So, you know, you might have a friend or a colleague who's been wrongfully imprisoned. One option is to break them out of jail because, you know, they're wrongfully imprisoned and society has no business restricting someone's freedoms unjustly. But the easier way to do that might just be petitioning the Baroness, but that would mean swallowing your pride and actually engaging with the social structures in place and therefore legitimizing them.
Yeah, I really like where the easiest option is apologizing to the Baroness. Like, the only thing she needs from you is a sincere apology and a promise that you're never going to do it again.
Right, yeah. And all you have to do is compromise your values.
And everyone else in the party is like, it's so easy. Just say it. And you're like, but it's the whole reason I'm doing this.
Guys, I just don't see myself doing that.
Right. I just, like, you know what, though? I'm really good at breaking them out of jail.
Right, yeah. another way that I love challenging chaotic players is by either giving them a glimpse or actually giving them responsibility for the sort of burden that rulership places on a person, right? So we're living this in our Birthright campaign right now, that all the problems kind of roll up to us and we're growing authoritarian so that we can actually put policies in place that address these problems. Even though many of our characters are sort of, yeah, let's use democracy and like keep society free and educate people.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're playing a chaotic neutral character. Right? Is Tannis? Tannin? Tannin is chaotic neutral?
He's actually neutral good.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
As played by Shane.
Well, keep in mind, he's a populist, right? So that's where his sort of morality comes from.
Giving
over to the will of the people, and, you know, guiding them in the right direction.
Well, Kirvel is, my character is chaotic good.
Right.
And yeah, it is tough to be like, oh, right, so we really should rule with an iron fist while we're away or place strictures so that nothing can go awry because
right.
these people cannot rule themselves.
Exactly, yeah. And even on a smaller scale, right? I mean, Birthright is about ruling countries and provinces, but like you could give characters the command of the defenses of a town, right? Or put them responsible for you know, escorting a group of civilians across like a hostile area, you know, like even like caravan guards, right? You have the responsibility of doing your job, but people are not making that easy for you because they're left to their own devices, which might be consistent with how you would like people to live and be treated, but inconsistent with effectively doing the job you signed up for.
Yeah. If you have identified pressure points earlier, like, you know, they have a soft spot for children, then leverage those, you know, put these characters in a position where, you know, the town is being attacked and they're the only ones currently present who can save the orphanage. Man, it is a hassle and a bother to put yourself in harm's way to defend an orphanage from marauding orcs. But, like, I'm not going to let children die.
Right.
Grr, why couldn't it have just been old people?
Right.
Remember that alignment is really about not just how the characters interact with the world, but how they interact specifically with other people. There are specific kinds of people that it is more or less easy to interact with. And for a chaotic neutral character, authority figures are probably the most fraught relationships that they're going to have.
Right. And I think the natural reaction, of course, is to reject authority or challenge it, right? Like, what gives you the right to declare this?
But just remember, if you are playing chaotic neutral, you are not suicidal. Probably you are the least suicidal.
Right, yeah.
You're looking out for number one often, and that means that if you're standing in the court in front of the king, you are probably not going to insult them to their face, especially if they're known for having people's heads cut off.
Yeah, like, a chaotic neutral character probably is not going to refuse to bend the knee as a matter of simple decorum. They might grumble under their breath as they do it, right? They might swear some type of revenge later, but they'll go along with it if it means self-preservation.
Right. Pragmatism usually means I should try to live to another day.
Right, yeah. I will live to exact my revenge and undo your institution. Being, you know, the feudal system entirely.
That seems like a lot of commitment.
It does, yeah.
I mean, this week anyway.
Right.
I'm undoing the feudal system. We'll see about next week.
What about enemies? What are some ways that chaotic neutral characters would interact with their enemies?
Well, we've talked about how, you know, you can have exceptions, but in general, you'll probably have few qualms about killing enemies or taking or interrogating prisoners. And of course, you are definitely not going to be above what other characters would consider to be underhanded tactics, setting ambushes, throwing pocket sand in your enemy's eyes, eye gouges, hits below the belt.
Yeah.
Below the belt's the best place to hit someone first.
Yeah, exactly. It brings them down to your level.
Right. Why would you not do that?
I think of, like, Bill the Butcher at the end of Gangs of New York. York, right? When he's just, like, kind of running through the smoke and sort of striking at Leo DiCaprio, like, hamstringing him, right? Just one hit at a time while he can't respond.
Mm-hmm. Look at the paladin and look at the things that they're not doing. Do those things.
Right, exactly. up to and including, you know, using the paladin to flank somebody.
Right.
And shiving them in the back.
I was in an honor duel. Yeah, well, I finished it.
Yeah, well, you were in an honor duel. Your honor is fine and my blade is wet.
Other questions that might be easily defined by social norms will be more defined by your personal belief system. So, you know, how do you feel about harming children or the elderly? How do you feel about harming the children or the elderly of other species?
Right. How do you treat the dead, right? Is looting allowed, right? Do you take the time to bury the dead? Do you provide last rites? That sort of stuff.
I love the idea of a thief who has utmost respect for the dead and won't loot the dead. So they're very good at pickpocketing. And they've got to steal the items before they kill them.
Right, yeah.
Once they're dead, I have to bury you with this purse.
I also like that idea of, like, I have to bury the dead, so I'm going to try and not dead people.
Right.
I'm going to try and use, like, the nonviolent approach or just knock them out because I don't want to have to deal with the hassle of digging another hole.
Right. I'm going to tie you up, but I'm going to get eaten by carrion crawlers. Well, yeah, nothing to bury.
Right. How about lawful characters? Because those are clearly the most diametrically opposite.
Yeah, I mean, they chafe a bit. They feel kind of oppressive. Even the ones who are talking about liberation. You know, they're seeking to stifle personal freedom, even if they want a free society.
Yeah, they might also see them as sort of squares or having an antiquated or unenlightened worldview. They might think of like their more chaotic view is better.
Right. The monk's vow of celibacy is super weird.
Yeah. Like, dude, you could just like do it.
Right. I'm not gonna tell anyone.
Right.
You don't even worship a god. You worship a philosophy. Is your philosophy gonna get angry?
Chaotic characters might also see more lawful characters as actually being oppressed by their attitudes, right? Like they're like that monk might be a victim of that oath, of that order, of that sort of vow, who needs to be freed from it, right? Like, so they can actually enjoy freedom and enjoy that sort of flexibility.
Yeah, the vow of poverty monk that you're hanging out with, I buy them the nicest stuff. We go out to eat in the nicest restaurants. I'll pay for it. I'll pay for it all. You don't have any money.
Right.
I'm just trying to show you. Money's pretty good.
This is the good life. And then when you get into the more like kind of lovable rogue kind of characters, they might take it as sort of a personal goal to challenge the lawful character's worldview, right? I think of this as like kids who are always trying to get the Buckingham Palace guards to crack a smile. You know, it's like, yeah, I get it. Yeah, I mean, you're a soldier, like a career soldier. You're up at dawn. You're, you know, doing your PT. You're doing all this stuff. Like, I'm just lazing about all day until it's time to work. I'm going to get you over to my side. Like, I'm just going to keep kind of nagging you about that, you know? Like, just kind of digging you a little bit every day until eventually you break and you come to see my point of view.
Yeah, and of course, the fewer lawful people there are in the world, the fewer people are nagging me to do all this stuff.
Right.
If we all just laze around, the world's a much better place.
Right. All that good needs, or all that evil needs for good to triumph is to just stay home.
But I want evil to stay home too.
Right. Yeah. Let's just chill,
it's,
guys.
It's balance. Have some pipe weed.
What about good characters?
Depending on how you view the moral axis, you might see good characters as naive, maybe even weak. Maybe they're hiding behind this moral code so that they don't have to deal with the actual problems of the real world. They don't need to make real decisions.
The alternative is they might see them as foolish or idealistic, right? Like your worldview is incompatible with the way that people actually live, right? Like it isn't all nice and bright and shining. It's actually very dark and gray and gritty and bloody.
Yeah, you don't know what it's like down here in the trenches.
Right.
Like I have risen above.
Right, exactly.
On the flip side, you might also get flack from evil characters. And you might have tension with them because, well, let's be honest, typically, like, they're doing things that aren't that much fun for other people other than themselves.
Yeah, evil tends to infringe on freedom, mostly, you know, by...
deading you.
Or exploiting you.
Yeah, if you think about it, obviously you're opposed to lawful evil because tyrants restrict the freedom of other people and probably you as well. But you're probably also opposed to chaotic evil as well because... dead farmers also aren't living the free life.
Right. Yeah, it's not as much of a moral sort of opposition, right? Like, because you probably do some bad things as well. Everyone has that capacity, but it could be just the effects of that evil outlook are too damaging to your sort of desire for freedom.
Right. You're probably less... you have less friction with, like, an evil businessman unless he's robbing you.
Right. Yeah.
But you probably have very few qualms about ending the menace, right? The paladin's like, ah, finally, someone who is justifiably evil and I will smite them, you know? But the neutral good priest is standing here going, ah, we must redeem them. And you have already shipped them.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, and it's not because they were evil. It's because being evil is bad for business, right? Like that could have come back on me, so I'm just going to head that one off at the pass.
Yeah, I see what you were doing, priest, and it was going to take a really long time.
Right.
Also, they were going to betray you, duh.
Yeah, exactly.
But in the party, remember that you're a team and you're getting along together, and the reason that you have stayed together as an adventuring party is because they offer things that you can't and vice versa. So if you're in a party with, for example, lawful characters, they probably have access or contacts that you don't. You know, society may be this authoritarian construct that's supposed to keep its boot on your neck and make sure that you can't have a good time. But occasionally, it's nice to be able to walk in with the proper papers and, you know, get excellent service rather than having to break in through the ceiling.
Yeah. You also might object to the approaches of your party members that are going to sort of lead to oppression of like an NPC's sort of free will, right? You would be kind of, you might be very in tune to the idea of that personal freedom remaining important, even though you are trying to accomplish sort of a greater goal, right? Like, we need an approach that still lets people be themselves. We don't want them to just fall in line with what we're doing because we say it's right, because that's oppressive.
Right. Might makes right is not the way to convince people of our justness, or the justness of our cause anyway.
Right.
I can also see like a philosophically chaotic neutral character being really uncomfortable with things like charm or domination magic. And being like, I don't know how I feel about taking over somebody's mind because it really overrides free will and that's really kind of the only thing I care about.
Yeah.
Or maybe you're just like, it's fine, use it. I'm going to get a permanent mind blank item, so I'm safe.
Right. You're also likely, or it's also possible to have tension or conflict with other chaotic neutral members of your party. This could be like perhaps because the source of your belief comes from different places, right? So I'm thinking like if you were raised in the wilds with a barbarian tribe, you would have a very different take on the value of chaotic neutral compared to a pampered noble who has rejected their society and privilege.
Yeah, and if both of you are just being selfish, it's very possible that those ends oppose each other.
Right.
All right, so let's talk about some pitfalls of playing chaotic neutral to the hilt.
So I think the first one is the one everyone fears the most. As soon as somebody says chaotic neutral, or perhaps to a greater degree even chaotic evil, is that sort of mercurial neutral. That unpredictable sociopathic character who has no firmly held beliefs, no outside, no greater motivation, no important relationships, no sense of self, and is just there to be solely the wild card.
Yeah, I don't know if I put food in my mouth or on my head.
Yeah, exactly. But I know I'm insulting that king to his face because he has a funny crown.
I think, was it second edition or third edition that was the one that defined chaotic neutral as this character is as likely to jump off a bridge as they are to stab someone? It was like
pointlessly capricious.
Right. For no reason, like essentially rolling dice every day as to how am I going to behave?
Yeah, so I would just remember, like, your, as a chaotic neutral character, your beliefs might be more malleable. They might be, you know, more flexible and open to sort of broader consideration. You know, you aren't tied to a code the way maybe like a lawful good character is. But that malleability and flexibility is sort of measured across like weeks and months of adventuring, not encounter to encounter of how you're going to act on a, you know, minute to minute basis.
Yeah. Han Solo is extremely loyal to Chewbacca.
Right.
And there's never going to be a time when he like betrays Chewbacca.
Yeah. As opposed to, you know, in the 15th minute of the movie, he stabs Chewbacca in the heart, spends the next 30 minutes nursing him back to health, only to stab him one more time.
Like, woohoo!
Yeah, exactly. I'm so zany. My name is Solo.
Get it? Hey.
So another potential pitfall for chaotic neutral characters is to sort of let neutral outweigh chaos and become sort of chaotic balanced, right? The idea of, you know, I care more about good and evil being even on the ledger, and that's defining my character, and the chaotic piece is just the secondary, right? So as you, if you get too into that balance, as we kind of talked about earlier, you end up doing so much evil in the name of balance, especially within your party, that you just become chaotic evil. Like, you're just the evil character at that point, because the balance is totally perceived. It's like it's a solipsistic perception of evil.
Yeah, it's tough to balance like with an in-game morality. Like, you kill one orphan, and like now you're evil.
Right.
Although I think we established last time it's four. Four orphans.
Four is the magic number. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I will say you can do this sort of balance like worldview. In a good theme campaign, if you start from the point of view that, like, there's enough evil in the world without us, right? Like, I'm just balancing all the other evil. I'm not going to go attempt to, like, even the ledger for our party. I'm looking at a bigger picture, right? Like, in the scope of all of the world, there's plenty of evil. We need to be good in order to balance that.
Yeah, you're digging the world out of this hole. This,
right.
Like, debt of goodness.
Right.
It reminds me of in Forgotten Realms, there's the priest of Ilmater, the god of suffering, who believe that, like, there's a finite amount of suffering in the world, like, that will be meted out to people. And so they injure themselves.
Yeah,
they self-flagellate so, like, that there's less suffering to go around.
Right, right.
And then, of course, there's the rebel without a cause, which we might also call chaotic stupid.
Yeah, and this is... this is kind of similar to Mercurial Neutral, but the idea here is that the character's ethos is wholly anti-establishment.
Right. Forget morality. Anything that is established order, I will burn to the ground.
Right. So this is the person who is insulting the king or outright attacking them. This is the person who steals wantonly, who pickpockets every possible merchant, you know, just cannot function in a society.
I don't have a concept of personal property.
Right.
I look like a child.
Exactly. Get out of here, Tasselhoff. Go burr somebody else's bottom. Is that his last name? Burrbottom? I don't remember.
I don't remember.
Whatever.
I try to put him out of my mind.
Burfoot? It's Burfoot.
Oh, it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not conducive to sharing the narrative with other characters who have different worldviews. It's not even conducive to sharing the narrative with other characters with the same worldview.
Yeah, I think it would be a short-lived campaign to just try and tear the world down as a group.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, if there are characters who have relationships and sort of plot motivations at all, you are just serving to impede them. Like, and also doing it in a way without the sort of broader oversight that a DM might, you're a problem player at that point.
Mm-hmm. You also end up shooting yourself in the foot. Attacking the king gets you killed.
Right. You're also a conveniently short-lived character for the rest of the party.
The problem solves itself.
Right. So if you want to do something like this, though, I would say it's better to be a rebel with a very well-established cause, right? One that you hold extremely dear and very vocal. We did this in Dark Sun. Brian, who plays Trix in the Dynasty Unwarranted campaign, he played a character called Malzus, who was a freed Mall slave who sought to end slavery, and especially for Malls.
Yes, like, Malzus, the Moses of Malls.
Right.
Moses.
He wanted to deliver the Malls to the Promised Land. And he established, you know, out front, that is my character, right? That's my concept. We all agreed. And we knew he would take unreasonable and unnecessary risks to do that, right? So if something came up where it was critical that he kind of stuff it, we had to do a lot of convincing for him. Otherwise, we had to plan around him sort of adding in this layer of objective to whatever we were trying to do.
Right, or we needed to essentially pay him in plot later.
Right.
Like, okay, we'll do this. We'll also buy 5 moles and free them.
Right, exactly. But this became so core to his character that it prevented him from pledging to the company, like our mercenary company. Like, he could not suborn this desire for the company's demands, so he had to stay sort of unattached.
Yeah, it was kind of cool because we were actually getting to the point where we were like, well, I mean, we could take on the freeing of the slaves issue as part of the company, and that would get him to join. And it's not just him that we're getting, right? But we're getting essentially every one of them that we free,
right?
Which is certainly not bad for our company. And, you know, the rest of us were usually some combination of, like, neutral alignment or good alignment. So pretty much everyone was like, and also we wouldn't mind if that happened.
Right, yeah. but, you know, pragmatically, freeing slavery or ending slavery in Dark Sun is sort of, ooh, that's a doozy.
Like, it's the same as bringing back the oceans.
Yeah, exactly. So, but you know, if you take an issue, you can definitely make that work with a DM who can kind of work that into the themes of the campaign as well.
All right, so what are some plot hooks that work well for chaotic neutral characters?
Take care of the blank problem. So bandits, kobolds, goblins, whatever. It's like a classic starting adventure, trope, but the key here is that once the PCs start to interact with whatever that problem group is, they understand how they're actually victims, right? So, you know, the farmers keep encroaching on the goblins or the kobold land, or, you know, the bandits have been disenfranchised and cast out by society, and they're just trying to make their way in the world.
Right. Suddenly you're going, wait, I'm working for the man. Yeah. Arr, damn it.
Yeah, exactly. I got to come to some alternative solution.
I'm the man. No. You can also do a neutral variant of Robin Hood, which is steal from people who deserve to get stolen from and keep it.
Robin Hood rich. Also, I mean, we're recapping in an entire campaign about it, but rogue traders are a great concept for more neutral, chaotic kind of characters. Like, the world is full of resources that have yet to be commercialized. Let's go get them and exploit them, because nothing levels the playing field better than disruptive trade.
So in conclusion, if you as a player don't feel particularly beholden to either of the moral axes, chaotic neutral can be a really fun alignment to play. It's an interesting outlook that can add a lot of spice to a party in small to medium doses.
Yeah, if you already have a chaotic neutral character in the party, I would really weigh carefully whether you need another one. Together, you know, if half the party is chaotic neutral, you might find yourselves sort of outweighing the other themes of the campaign in favor of this sort of freedom idea.
Yeah, do you need two Jack Sparrows in a story?
Right.
No, you don't always even need one Jack Sparrow in a story.
Right, yeah. So just be aware that, like, adhering too strongly to chaotic neutral can step on other players' toes and sort of start to remove their agency if you're too proactive in your worldview. Do you hear that, Ishan?
I'm jumping off a bridge!
Well, I hope we're going to roll up a character who bounces. So we're going to have to move on to the Character Creation Forge. But before we do that, let's talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We do love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane at Mundangerous. That's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan at Evil Sans Carne. That's malice minus meat.
And you can tweet at the show at TPTcast.
You can also email us at totalpartythrill@gmail.com.
And you can find us on the web at www.totalpartythrillcast.com.
We're also on Facebook and Instagram at Total Party Thrill.
So this week in the Character Creation Forge, we are building the Trickster.
And as you may have guessed, we're incorporating a fae theme here because there is no kind of creature in D&D that is more closely associated with funsy little tricks.
Yeah, trickery is sort of what they do.
And the fae.
Illusion, charm, silver tongues, you know, manipulation. That's sort of what the trickster does and also what the fae do.
All right, so Shane, what's the build?
So the build is Archfey, Pact of the Chain Warlock 14, and College of Glamour Bard 6.
So from Warlock, we're going to get Fey Presence. So it's a charm or frighten effect, your choice, within a 10-foot cube. We got the Great Misty Escape. You can turn invisible and Misty Step as a reaction to taking some damage.
Yeah, you'll also get Beguiling Defenses at level 10. That basically lets you counter charm anyone who attempts to charm you. And then at 14, you get Dark Delirium, which basically traps an enemy in their own imagination for a minute, which is an illusion and charm effect. And then we use Pact of the Chain because you can get the kind of cool invisible familiars, which allow for a lot of, you know, shall we say, hijinks.
Yeah, I mean, the imp has invisibility and shape changing. And the pseudo dragon, I think, can also turn invisible and has a little bit of sleep poison.
Yep. But you can use, is it voice of the
chain master?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That lets you speak through your familiar. Yeah. So you can do a lot of like manipulation and hijinks that way.
Right. Especially when it's invisible.
Right. Yeah. Where's that voice coming from? And then Bard 6 is sort of where the core of this build comes from. That, of course, you get expertise. So we'll take deception and persuasion. And then the level 3 ability, Mantle of Inspiration, not super on theme, but it does give opportunity attack-free movement and some temp HP for your bardic inspiration to your allies. But then you get Enthralling Performance, which is another mass charm ability. So as you can see, we're really doubling down on the charm. Because at level 6, you will get Mantle of Majesty, which allows you to cast Command as a bonus action for a minute. And the key here is that charmed creatures automatically fail their saving throw against your command. So once you've charmed them through any of your myriad ways of doing it, you use Command to make them fight for you.
Yeah, this is, one, a wonderful out-of-combat ability where you get to cast 10 command spells,
right?
Basically, yeah. Like in a room or in a negotiation.
Yep.
But even in combat, it is utter chaos.
Right.
Every round just grovel, run, drop, sleep.
Yep. Stop whatever you're doing and don't do that anymore. And so that's sort of the basis of the build, right? It would be get charms out on your enemies and then use Mantle of Majesty in order to disrupt whatever they would be doing in combat. And then for leveling order, I would actually just take Bard to 6 to start and then go Warlock 14. There are other ways to do this. You can kind of layer in some Warlock levels in there as well, but that's the simplest and most direct way. And I think it makes a lot of sense just to get your kind of core engine working as a Bard and then add more charm effects as a Warlock. So, Ishin, who is your trickster?
My trickster is pragmatic and chaotic neutral.
Okay, that's on theme.
Yes, yes. But given that she lives in an authoritarian society, her pragmatism has led her to work for the government.
Okay.
As
a sleeper agent.
As a spy master in another country.
In the deep state.
Elsewhere where rules are much more relaxed. A much nicer place to live.
Okay, Julian Assange.
Look, we have always been at war with Eurasia, but it's much nicer to live in Eurasia. So I will go do that.
So this is Kerry Russell in the Americans.
Yeah, I like that. But okay, so begins as Kerry Russell in the Americans, or like a Black Widow, Red Sparrow type situation you know, you've been trained to be enthralling, trained to, you know, be someone who is an excellent liar and can get information from, you know, anyone. But if Kerry Russell then decided that I don't like singing, and in fact, I don't really love working for this authoritarian government, I need a way to get out. And could reach into the Feywild and make a pact with an otherworldly creature to gain supernatural power, then I think then this is this character.
Okay.
She has decided, all right, I don't want to be a spy anymore. I don't want to have the boot of my original country always hovering over me. So instead, I will make a pact not with a fiend who would lord this power over me and demand too much, but from a Fey Lord who understands that I will do whatever I want with this power, and in fact is perfectly happy with that because they are chaos itself. And I am perfectly happy to continue the work that I do here, live the life that I want, but sow some chaos sometimes from afar through the help of my invisible familiar who can, you know, be anywhere on this plane, right? Can go back home and start casting suggestion spells for me.
Okay.
While I figure out a way to take down my initial country from within eventually. I think that's her end goal, is eventually bring down the authoritarian country that trained her in the first place. What about your trickster?
My trickster is a little more overt in the way that he sows discontent amongst the establishment. He is the lead singer of a punk loot rock band. A traveling band of minstrels who, you know, puts out these enthralling performances for the crowd, whips them into a frenzy, and then sends them forth to fight for their own freedom against the awful establishment that is oppressing them in this feudal society.
So it's basically a USO tour.
Yeah, kind of. I'm actually like kind of more like Pussy Riot. Is that fair?
I think that's absolutely fair.
Isn't that exactly who they are, basically? Yeah.
They absolutely have expertise in enthralling performances.
Right. And also getting thrown in jail a lot.
They get out, usually.
Right.
So.
Yeah, well, you got a very useful set of skills. but yeah, so I like that idea that, they tour around, as sort of a cover ID of being the adventuring party, being just sort of touring minstrels, but they're kind of do-gooders for hire, as well as sort of sowing this seeds of a better, more open society.
So it's basically Jem and the Holograms. They have superpowers as they go on tour.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar with that reference, but
you don't
I'm
know Jem and the Holograms?
I'm gonna say yes.
Oh, we are gonna have to have a sit down.
I don't remember them being in the G.I. Joe movie. Could you please map it to a reference I understand more acutely?
If Snake Eyes pulled off his mask and it turned out that he was a teenage girl with pink hair who had a computer in her earring that could turn her between a rock star and a regular teenage girl, kind of like Hannah Montana, but way cooler.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I follow. I mean, I do feel like that movie was basically a character assassination of Snake Eyes because he did nothing.
Did he fall? Is that the episode where he fell? Or is that a different one?
No, that's a different one. Okay. That's the one where he fights his like counterpart in Cobra.
Oh, in the white?
Yeah.
Okay.
But no. In this one, he just gets like ambushed with the rest of the G.I. Joes who chase them to Cobra Law, and then gets like swallowed up by those giant trees as they break out, and like never does anything cool, and obviously he never says a word, so he just gets like no screen time. He gets total short shrift.
That sucks.
Anyway,
if you remember Jem and the Holograms or the G.I. Joe movie at TPTcast, let us know.
All right, before we wrap up, let's take a moment and thank our Patreon supporters.
Yeah, your support is what makes it possible for us to keep doing this show every single week. We're here every week.
If you would like to learn more, you can check out our Patreon rewards at patreon.com/TotalPartyThrill. And you can also find the link in the show notes to the Character Creation Forge Codex, which was the reward that our Patreon supporters provided to us at $200. So what do we have planned for next week's episode?
We're talking about adapting published adventures.
And in the Character Creation Forge,
we're building the Master of the Midnight Hunt.
Well, that's it for episode 138 of Total Party Thrill. I hope we lived up to our name. But either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening.